I sell you anyways.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. We'll go ahead and get started. Let the record show that it is 8:30 a.m. on December 23rd. This is the continuation of the formal hearing in Public Service Commission case number RC-13-850. It's the matter of the Coyote Creek Mining Company LLC's permit number NACC-1302. This is a continuation of the hearing that began last Friday, December 19th. Initially, ALJ Janet Seaworth was the procedural ALJ in this matter. She has had a family emergency and is unable to preside over today's part of the hearing. My name is Wade Mann, and I'm the director of OEH and also a also an administrative law judge, and I will be presiding over the remainder of this hearing as the procedural administrative law judge. It's my understanding that we took testimony from Mr. Voigt on Friday and also members of the public. I don't think we need to go through all of the preliminaries at this point, but I would, just for my benefit and maybe the benefit of anybody in the audience and listening, just have everybody note their appearances again for me for the record, beginning with Coyote Creek.
Yes, Your Honor. My name is Brian Biella with the law firm of Crawley, Fleck, and Bismarck, representing Coyote Creek Mining Company. Along with me is Mr. Blaine Johnson of our firm and quite a few members of the Coyote Creek Mining Company.
Could you just identify who's at the table with you?
Mr. Don Steffen, D-O-N-N-S-T-E-F-F-E-N, Environmental Manager, Coyote Creek.
Okay.
And Sarah Flath, F-L-A-T-H, Environmental Specialist at Coyote Creek.
Okay. Mr. Broughton.
Derek Broughton with Baumstark Broughton Law Partners in Bismarck on behalf of Casey Voigt, who requested the hearing. I also have with me J.J. England, another attorney in the firm, and right behind me is Mark Anderson, one of our experts who will be testifying today.
Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco is Commission Counsel, and with me is the Director of the Reclamation Program, Jim Deitch, Assistant Director Dean Mose, and one of the environmental scientists, Guy Welch.
Okay. And before, I guess, we begin with the testimony, are there any additional preliminary matters? Mr. Biella?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Broughton?
Yeah, I would bring up one thing. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco mentioned on Friday that she would like the ability for some of her staff members to be able to ask questions of the expert witnesses that we put on. And at the time, I had said I would like to reserve my objection. I'd like to reserve it for individual questions, depending on what's being asked. In general, I'm okay with that as long as everybody's willing to indulge me consulting with my experts during my examination of others as well.
Sir, we did, Derek and I did discuss that after the hearing, and I think we're on the same page, and I'm okay with that also.
With that?
Yes.
Go ahead, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
This was a different topic, if Mr. Biella has it.
Mr. Biella?
Yes, we're fine with that.
Okay. So Mr. Deutsch will be able to ask questions, and Mr. Broughton, you'll be able to consult with your experts if necessary during your questioning.
Great.
And Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, other preliminary issues?
Well, only that I'm not sure if the little indicator of the first two topics means that you might misunderstand, but the order of the presentations today is not the company first, like a normal application. It's the landowner first, and then the company, and then the commission.
Judge Seaworth did indicate that that's how we were proceeding. Okay, thank you. Before we get started, commissioners, do you have anything to say before we get going? Commissioner Christman?
Not really, except to point out that there was some discussion about needing a third day, and I think there were some dates floated around and discussion. I don't know if anything is finalized on that. I'm still hopeful that, you know, if we can get done today, that would be nice. But if we need to bring people back, the most important thing is, in my mind, that we get all the information necessary to make a good decision.
Sure. Commissioner Kalk?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Commissioner Petrocek?
No comment.
Okay. Mr. Broughton, was Mr. Voigt's testimony complete? Are you on to your next witness then?
Yes, Your Honor. We're calling one of our first expert witnesses who's going to be testifying by phone this morning.
Okay. What's the witness's name?
His name is Charles Norris.
Chuck.
It is Chuck.
God bless America.
Mr. Norris?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Wade Mann. I'm the administrative law judge, and we've got you on the speaker in the hearing room at the Public Service Commission.
Okay.
And are you prepared to testify?
I am.
All right. Before doing so, I'm required to give you an oath, and I need to advise you of the penalty for perjury. In North Dakota, it is a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum fine of $10,000, maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. And being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter?
I do.
All right. Go ahead, Mr. Broughton.
Just one thing preliminarily. I'd like to cover some of Mr. Norris's background. I've just handed everybody basically a resume that has his full qualifications. What I would like to ask opposing counsel is if we could stipulate to the expertise as represented on this, and that way I can just cover his background very briefly rather than going through it in detail and just save some time today.
No objection, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Norris.
Your Honor.
Excuse me. Sorry, Ms. Jeff.
I have no objection, but I thought that, I think for the record, perhaps you should state the topic that, or topics, or subject areas that you are qualifying him as an expert in.
Sure.
Hang on. Also, then I assume you'd like the CV or the resume marked as an exhibit as well?
Yes, I would, if there's no objection.
And I guess, I don't know how we started it. I think there was only one exhibit in last time, and it was identified as Kyle Creek number one. It should identify this as Voigt number one. Would that be the easiest, I think?
Let's yeah, that makes sense to me.
It'll be Voigt exhibit number one. And then you can go ahead.
Mr. Norris, can you state your name and business address for the record, please?
Charles H. Norris, N-O-R-R-I-S. I work for GeoHydro Incorporated, 1928 East 14th Avenue, Denver, Colorado, 80206.
And can you give us just a brief background of your education and professional experience?
I received a bachelor's degree in geology in 1969 from the University of Illinois, a master's in geology in 1970 from the University of Washington in Seattle. I returned to a PhD program in the, I believe it was in 87, at the University of Illinois and pursued that through a preliminary examination, but I did not finish the dissertation. I started my professional geology career in 1972, have been continuously employed as a geologist. I currently work for GeoHydro Incorporated, a company I started in the mid-90s here in Colorado. GeoHydro is essentially a full-service consulting company in geology, but specializes in water issues. In the course of my career, I've done a great deal of consulting for and related to surface mining throughout Appalachia, the middle part of the country, and out here in the West. Clients vary from individual citizens to small citizens groups to larger consulting companies to coal companies and power companies, and have served on assessment committees or an assessment committee for West Virginia with respect to a year-long program looking and assessing their cumulative hydrologic impact assessments.
Okay, and can you give us just a brief description of the testimony that you're going to give today with respect to your expertise?
Yes, I will be testifying with respect to alluvial valley floor determinations for the Coyote Creek mine area.
Okay, and can you give us just a very brief description of your experience analyzing or looking at information related to alluvial valley floor determinations?
Yeah, and any time one is involved with looking at a mine permit or mine operations west of the 100th Meridian, alluvial valley floors become an issue with respect to mine plans and mine design. I've personally been involved with those that aspect of mines at an Alton coal mine in Utah, currently Otter Creek in Montana. Several years ago, I analyzed in detail the AVF information for South Hart in North Dakota, and then now the Coyote Creek mine. I've also looked at a mine on behalf of Pittsburgh and Midway Coal Company, the York Canyon mine in New Mexico. The issues I was looking at there were water quality issues, however, rather than specifically alluvial valley floor issues.
Okay. And have you reviewed documentation related to the Coyote Creek mine permit that is pertinent to the issue of alluvial valley floors?
Yes.
Okay. And in your opinion, is there sufficient information within the actual permit application for someone to make a scientifically valid determination with respect to alluvial valley floors?
There is not.
Okay. And what parts of the actual permit application address alluvial valley floors?
Within the permit application itself, I found discussion of alluvial valley floors, which, if it's all right, I will tend to refer to as AVFs, just for convenience sake.
Sure.
In parts section 2.6.1, which is entitled Alluvial Valley Floor Determination, and section 2.6.2, which is a map of various AVF determination areas.
Okay, and what data was presented in sections 2.6.1 and 2.6.2 of the application?
No data pertinent to a determination of AVF within the impact area of the proposed mine were presented.
Okay, and if no data were presented, what was presented in those sections of the permit application?
Section 2.6.2 was a map that displayed various areas that were part of one or more AVF studies in the area. Section 2.6.1 presented a one-paragraph summary of an initial study by Dr. Bickel, dated the 20th of March, 2013, an alluvial valley floor determination report. It included an agency letter of deficiencies with respect to that report that was dated the 13th of May, 2013. And the company's response to the deficiency letter with a revised report of 20 August 2013, and finally it presented the agency's determination of no AVF on 26th of August 2013.
Okay, and did the agency produce any other documents related to the Alluvial Valley floor determination?
Yes.
And what was that?
Well, it presented a discussion in the cumulative hydrologic impact assessment of AVFs.
Okay, and what discussion was provided? In my understanding is that cumulative hydrologic impact assessment is often shortened to CHIA. Is it all right if we refer to it as that?
I would from habit tend to automatically call it CHIA, and I would
okay.
be very amenable to that.
And can you tell us what was discussed in the CHIA?
The CHIA identified the 2013 initial and revised Bickel reports. That was the Coyote Creek AVF reports, and identified the August 26, 2013 determination by the agency that there were no AVFs. The CHIA referenced a 2009 AVF report by Dakota Westmoreland Company that was produced as part of a revision of permit KRSB 8603 that overlapped the area of the Bickel report of 2013. The agency asserted that the Coyote Creek AVF report information, quote, was based on existing information available in published work, approved mining permits, and related data in the public domain from the surface mining reclamation and regulatory process, and observations of professionals involved in the acquisition of baseline data for the application of permits NACC 1301 and NACC 1302.
Okay, so a similar question to before. Did the CHIA provide any independent data with respect to the presence or absence of alluvial valley floors?
No.
Okay, and did the CHIA include the 2013 Bickel report?
The Bickel report was not attached to the CHIA.
Okay, and what about the Dakota Westmoreland Company 2009 report? Was that included in the CHIA?
No.
Okay. And you said the CHIA mentioned existing information available in the published work, approved mining permits and related data in the public domain from the surface mining reclamation and regulatory process and observations of professionals. Were any of those items included within the CHIA?
No, they were not specifically identified, and none were included.
Okay. And just as a side note for the folks in the room and the commissioners, I passed out the various reports he's discussing. I'm going to be asking for one of them to be admitted to evidence, but otherwise I'm just giving them to you so you can reference them while he's testifying about them. And we've talked about the 2013 report by Bickel. Did you have an opportunity to review that?
I did.
Okay, and did that report include any independent data regarding the presence or absence of alluvial valley floors?
No.
Okay, and what did that report provide?
It provided a summary of previous work in the area, including reference to the Dakota Westmoreland Company 2009 report and excerpts from a 1985 report entitled Draft Reconnaissance Maps to Assist in Identifying Alluvial Valley Floors, West Central North Dakota, by the Office of Surface Mining Reclamation and Enforcement, which, for convenience sake, if it's acceptable, I will just refer to that organization as OSM.
Sure.
From here on. It also similarly asserted reliance, like the CHIA, to, quote, existing information available in published work, approved mining permits, and related data in the public domain from surface mining reclamation and regulatory process.
Okay. Did the report provide any information from any new investigations of the site?
No.
Okay. And independent of the contents of the permit application and the CHIA, did you have an opportunity to review the 1985 OSM draft reconnaissance report that we referenced?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And did that report provide any independent data or observations with respect to the existence of alluvial valley floors at the mine site?
Yes, it did.
Okay, and can you describe what that was for us?
Data or observations were provided with respect to the landforms or geomorphology of Coyote Creek Valley, and with respect to the implications of remote imagery that existed for the area.
Okay, and what observations were made regarding the landforms and geomorphology?
On page 16 of the 1985 OSM report, Coyote Creek was described as a perennial stream with multiple alluvial terraces, the higher of which could be flood irrigated. In the upper reaches of the creek, a single terrace is also described that is flood irrigable and partially floods naturally.
And for those following along, it looks like the numbering was a little bit different on one of the documents we gave to Mr. Norris, but in the ones we handed out here, this information would appear on page 20.
The page 16, I believe, is the document page number.
Right. And I'm not sure if you covered this, but were there observations made regarding the implications of the available remote imagery for the area?
Yes. There was. The imagery that was available was Landsat imagery, and from the frequency of the imaging that was done, sub-irrigation was inferred based upon moisture content that was indicated for the vegetation, where imagery indicated that vegetative growth in the late growing season occurred for most of the 5 years of reviewed data. That is, they eliminated the wet years. Where vegetative growth late in the season was indicated, sub-irrigation was inferred.
Excuse me, can you restate what page we're on in this report? Because the page numbers are kind of cut off on some of the copies.
It would be page 20, as the numbers appear on the very bottom in the middle. There's a section on that page for Coyote Creek specifically.
Could we take a minute and number the pages? Because we don't have any numbers
on
our copy.
So if we just count 20 pages in, it will be there?
No, because there's a good different cover here.
It's about 5 pages from the back.
I don't have the right one.
Is it 5 pages from the back?
Well, I don't have page.
I need to know.
Well,
exactly.
Here's a 24.
Okay. Oh, it's numbered. You can see it then.
Yeah, maybe I do.
The turn.
I got a sideways one.
Okay. I got it.
Okay. But not the whole page.
Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Sorry. Excuse me.
Okay, Mr. Norris, was there an assessment in this report made of with respect to alluvial valley floors in the Coyote Creek Valley?
Yes, there was. It was assessed as a potential AVF, in part because, quote, sub-irrigation and natural flood irrigation are important, end of quote, and that's found on page 11 of the document, or the page that is designated 11 in the document. And then quoting from page 1, this means that the area is one that is likely, and likely is emphasized in the OSM document. This means that the area is one that is likely to meet the definition of AVF, end of quote.
Can you explain the significance of sub-irrigation and natural irrigation with respect to alluvial valley floors and their importance?
Yes, the concept of alluvial valley floors in the surface mining law is that areas that are irrigated or irrigable are an important economic feature for agriculture in the arid West. And that when the water is available in alluvial sediments for irrigation, that those lands are afforded additional protection under the regulations. And the use of the water in an alluvial valley can either be anthropogenic, that is, human-engineered systems that make water that's available in the valley available to the crops, or water in the sediments that occurs at depths that they are available to enhance the production of crops beyond what would exist in areas where that subsurface water is not available. And that natural subsurface irrigation of agricultural crops is called sub-irrigation.
Okay, and we also talked about a 2009 report produced by Dakota Westmoreland Company. Did you have an opportunity to review that?
Yes, I did.
Okay, and did that report provide any independent data with respect to the potential existence of AVF?
Yes, it did.
Okay, and what independent data or observations did that report contain?
The report presented anecdotal information to the effect that hay production on the alluvial valley terrace of the Voigt property was significantly greater than hay production on the uplands on the ranch. The report also provided an anecdotal description of visual observations of vegetative conditions on the alluvial terrace at the Voigt property during a walkover of the property conducted in the spring of 2009, perhaps in mid-May.
And maybe this is something we should have started with, but we've been talking about sub-irrigation and flood irrigation and so forth, and you explained the connection for us between sub-irrigation and alluvial valley floors, but can I have you just back up for a moment and just give us a description or definition of alluvial valley floors and their importance?
Alluvial valley floors are areas that are composed of alluvial sediments, which are unconsolidated water deposited sediments associated with streams and rivers that have sufficient water in the alluvial sediments and or the stream that allow irrigation either artificially, man designed irrigation, or natural sub-irrigation, the results of which are enhanced agricultural production.
Okay, and is there a definition for a perennial stream?
Perennial stream is a stream that flows all year long. It's not one that dries out, routinely dries out during the dry season. It still has water in it 365 days a year.
Okay, and there was a comment in the Dakota Westmoreland Company report stating that the terrace was comprised of water-deposited unconsolidated sediments. Did the report determine that?
The Westmoreland report accepted existing interpretations that the sediments in Coyote Creek were water-deposited unconsolidated sediments. That was not an investigation they explicitly did of the sediments themselves. They just accepted that based on existing data and previous opinions, including relying on the 1985 OSM report.
Okay. And same question with respect to Coyote Creek being a perennial stream. Did the Dakota Westmoreland report make that determination?
No. As with the nature of the sediments, the report did accept that as being the case based upon existing data and previous studies.
Okay. And did the Dakota Westmoreland report make a determination as to whether or not AVF existed in the Coyote Creek Valley?
Yes, it did.
And what was that finding?
The report, in its summary conclusions, on page 30, concluded that Coyote Creek Valley contains no AVF within the study area.
Okay, and what was the rationale or basis for that finding?
There were four sub-findings that led to the summary conclusion. Those four sub-findings are found on page 30 of the report. The first sub-finding was an acknowledgement that alluvial sediments are in the valley, that the unconsolidated sediments in the valley are alluvial sediments, and that is one of the requirements for AVF. The second and third conclusions were respectively that artificial flood irrigation of the Voigt land was not presently occurring, and that there was no evidence that it had occurred, had ever occurred. Such irrigation would be evidence for AVF had there been such flood irrigation. The fourth conclusion, and therefore the controlling one in this case, was that sub-irrigation does not play a role in enhancement of crop production in the study area. That conclusion that there is no sub-irrigation then is what precipitates the summary conclusion that there is no AVF.
Okay, and so do you agree with that fourth conclusion regarding the existence of sub-irrigation enhancing crop production?
No, I do not.
Okay, and do you hold that opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
I do.
And would you explain the basis for your opinion?
Certainly. The entirety of the investigation, when that's reviewed, it is apparent that the sole basis for asserting no role for sub-irrigation is the subjective perception that plant vigor and density may have decreased as one walked from the edge of the valley toward the creek. Two sentences of this 31-page report comprise really the entirety of the case against the role of sub-irrigation for crop enhancement. Those two sentences are found in the last paragraph on page 29, and I'd like to emphasize those. Quoting that paragraph, surveys revealed that those plants nearest the creek, which should have the best access to sub-irrigation, were, if anything, in poorer condition and or had poorer population densities than the average plant in the field. The most productive plants were the beneficiaries of additional surface water, not groundwater, by virtue of their location in or near the foot slope position. The first problem with this two-sentence conclusion and the observations that were being looked at, the first problem is that the walkover of the field was conducted at the worst time of the year to assess the impacts of sub-irrigation. It was done in early spring, mid-May, at a time of early annual growth. Late summer, long after spring rains, snow melts, the spring water are gone, is the appropriate time to investigate sub-irrigation if there's going to be any.
Can you explain why that is?
It's the time of year when sub-irrigation will be supporting the plant growth. During the spring, there's lots of water in virtually any area for the early growth of crops. It's in the mid and late summer when things heat up, dry out, that you've lost the impact of spring rains and snow melt, that there is not enough active water being provided by precipitation for active active plant growth. That's the time of year when the influence of sub-irrigation can be observed.
Okay. And you mentioned that you had other problems with this two-page or two-sentence conclusion, the report. Can you tell us what the other problems were?
Yes. Another problem is that the subjective perception that there are progressive changes of plant vigor and population across the site is without any supporting data or documentation, at least in the report. I found no maps in the report depicting the traverses across the fields. There was no photographic evidence that I saw of the vegetative trends. There were no counts of plant density, numbers and varieties, or any quantification of plant vigor. If the vegetative trends that were reported did exist in mid-May of 2009, the assessment of the observations did not address or apparently consider potential causes of those variations beyond asserting that it is evidence of a lack of sub-irrigation. Since the walkover was performed at the start of the growing season, the observations are not the result of the 2009 growing season. They're the conditions going into the 2009 growing season. The previous winter, December of 08, January, and February of 09, were exceptionally wet in Beulah. Those 3 months were 250%. Precipitation was 250% of the 30-year climatic average. March of 2009 recorded 7.5 times the normal precipitation. This is based on USDA climate data, the WETS table that can be found at agacis.rec-acis.org/38057. There was no consideration that, for example, what was being looked at in terms of plant distributions was not stressed to the area, observed that the stress to the area was simply the result of perhaps prolonged submergence and scouring by floodwaters in the areas nearest the stream in response to exceptional March precipitation that followed immediately after an unusually wet, snowy winter. Something other than a dismissal of sub-irrigation would appropriately have been considered and discussed, particularly since it was not the time of year when you can even see the effects of sub-irrigation.
Okay. And you discussed the observations made with respect to the vegetation and the fact that it was less dense near the river. You know, assuming those observations are true, would that change your opinion with respect to the existence of sub-irrigation?
No. No, it wouldn't. Even were the anecdotal evidence valid and it were reflective of persistent conditions, it would simply reflect a pattern that is common for alluvial valley floodplains with significant sub-irrigation.
And did you develop a schematic to explain why that's common?
Yes, I did.
Okay, and I've handed that out to everyone. I intended as a demonstrative exhibit just to aid with Mr. Norris's explanation, but Mr. Norris, we're all looking at the schematic you developed. Can you just explain what you're showing on that schematic with respect to sub-irrigation?
Yes, the schematic shows a half width of an alluvial valley sediment, an alluvial valley with that has been cut into bedrock and has alluvial valley sediments in it, so that you're On the left-hand side of the schematic, you've got the highlands with the bedrock and the soils associated with the bedrock. You move in, as you move to the right, there is a package of alluvial sediments, sediments laid by the stream in the valley, and at the far right is the creek, which in this case would be Coyote Creek. Then within the alluvial sediments, I have depicted a water table, if you will, water saturated sediments at the bottom of the alluvial sediments, unsaturated sediments at the top, and a boundary between the two of partially saturated sediments. That boundary between saturation and unsaturation at the position of the creek will be the elevation of the creek. And as one moves away from the creek to the left, that saturated, the boundary between saturated and unsaturated will gain in elevation as one moves away from the creek. So the elevation of the water within the sediments is higher at the edge of the valley than it is where the creek is in the valley. And in this particular case, you will notice that the creek is depicted as being incised or eroded down into its own sediments, which is the condition that's observed in Kiowa Creek. The top of the alluvial floodplain is above the creek level. So there's a lip to the or a escarpment at the face of the alluvial sediments next to the creek. So with that description, the point is that the assertion that the plants nearest the creek, quote, should have the best access to subirrigation, unquote, has no scientific basis as an expectation or rule of thumb for a stream like Kiowa Creek. For a stream that is incised into its floodplain, as Kiowa Creek is, the lip of the terrace closest to the creek will undergo the deepest and most rapid decline of groundwater levels as the creek levels decline in the spring and summer into the dry season. In areas away from the creek, towards the side of the alluvial valley, groundwater levels decline less and decline more slowly than right at the creek. Any part of the floodplain terrace, if any part of the floodplain terrace, were to see groundwater levels drop below the effective depth for subirrigation, it will be in the areas closest to the stream, and those would be the areas you would expect to see dry season stress to the crops. If the plant patterns perceived by the author in the 2009 report in fact exist, those patterns reflect drought stress rather than some other, and, I'm sorry, if those patterns reflect drought stress rather than some other process or event, that stress is found exactly where it would be expected in the alluvial valley sediments that do not have sub-irrigation support. Okay. It is a verification of the observation of OSM in 1985 that sub-irrigation in Coyote Creek drainage is important, and it is a confirmation of OSM's expectation that AVF is likely.
And before we move on from the 2009 report, are there any other problems or things that you would take issue with as far as the findings in that report?
Yes, there is. The second sentence of the two-sentence dismissal of the AVF, I think, is inaccurate misleading. The assertion that areas perceived as having denser or more vigorous growth are not beneficiaries of subirrigation by groundwater, but of, quote, additional surface water, unquote, I think is without merit. There is no evidence that any of the crops are receiving water from anything but groundwater. For the sake of argument, perhaps, there is more surface water recharging the alluvial valley in the vicinity of the foot slope at the side of the valley. It's irrelevant. Regardless of its origin, the water is alluvial groundwater when it is taken up by the plants on the floodplain. And it is that groundwater that is taken up by the plants that enhances the agricultural production. And everyone agrees that the floodplain has higher production. None of the groundwater in an alluvial valley originates in the alluvial aquifer. The groundwater is a composite of precipitation, of recharge from Coyote Creek when it is high, recharge from runoff from the uplands, recharge from any side streams that flow across or onto the alluvial valley, and bedrock discharges that flow into it from the sides or beneath. All those sources of water contribute to the hydrology of the aquifer. There is no separate accounting system that negates the contribution of some particular source of water with respect to whether or not sub-irrigation is effective. All of the water contributes to the sub-irrigation when it exists. It all counts.
Okay. Do you have a professional opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty as to whether AVF exists in the Coyote Creek drainage at the Voigt property?
Yes.
And what's that opinion?
AVF is demonstrated to exist in the Coyote Creek drainage where the Voigt property is used for hay production.
And do you have a professional opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty as to whether AVF exists elsewhere in the Coyote Creek drainage?
Yes.
And what's that opinion?
I share the opinion of OSM in 1985 that AVF is likely to occur elsewhere in the Coyote Creek drainage.
Okay, and you indicate that it likely occurs, so your opinion is certain with respect to the Coyote Creek drainage where the Voigt property is used for hay production, and you believe it likely occurs elsewhere in the Coyote Creek drainage. Can you explain that?
Yes. In the Voigt property, the vegetative patterns that are described in the 2009 Dakota Westmoreland are consistent with a conformation of alluvial valley floor in those locations. I have seen no investigations or data from other areas that would allow one to move from an opinion of likely existence to demonstrated existence, except in the Voigt areas.
Okay, and have you seen any investigations or data from other areas of Coyote Creek, the Coyote Creek drainage that demonstrate AVF does not exist?
No.
Okay. And just one more quick question. We've been talking about the OSM report. Is it your understanding that this was a report of findings produced by the Office of Surface Mining?
Yes.
Okay. I have no further questions and would offer the OSM report in as Voigt Exhibit Number 2.
Mr. Biello?
I have no objection to Exhibit 2, but I would state that Mr. Norris has testified substantially from the Dakota Westmoreland report, so I believe it must be admitted as an exhibit.
I have no objection. The reason I'm asking for the OSM report and not the others, and I'll let Alana correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that the others are part of the administrative record, and this one isn't. But if we want to make that an exhibit to this proceeding, I have no problem with that either.
I was going to ask for the same request as Mr. Biella. The everything that's been docketed or is part of the administrative record is not evidence in the evidentiary record of the hearing. And if we want it in, even the permit, somebody's got to put it in. So I would also hope that the Westmoreland report is coming in, and then I'm not sure what the others were here that we, if we talked about them or not, if they have to go in.
There would be two others, the CHIA, Cumulative Hydrological Impact Assessment, which is the form of a memorandum, I believe, produced by the PSC. What was the other one? Oh, and the Bickle report, which I think was produced by Coyote Creek, or Mr. Bickle was hired by Coyote Creek.
I'd ask for them all to come in and just someone give them their names and numbers.
Mr. Biella?
I would concur, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, the OSM report will be void exhibit number 2. The Coyote Creek Alluvial Valley Floor Study looks like conducted by Dakota Westmoreland, October 2009 revision. That will be exhibit or void exhibit number 3. And the October 15th, 2014 memorandum. Public Service Commission, is that, what did you reference that document as?
The CHIA, Cumulative Hydrological Impact Assessment.
All right, that will be identified as void exhibit number 4. The Alluvial Valley Floor Evaluation Report prepared by Dr. David Bickle. That will be void exhibit number 5. And then I think it also makes sense to have in the diagram as well. That will be void exhibit number 6. Mr. Biella, did you have any objections to any of these exhibits that have been offered? 2 through 6.
Could I just ask a question of Mr. Norris with respect to number 6?
That's fine. Well, you have the ability to cross-examine them soon. So, I mean, if you want to do it right now, just a quick one before admitting the exhibit, that's fine. Mr. Norris, Mr. Biella is going to ask you a question.
Sure.
Now, number 6, if I understand, is just illustrative. This is not an actual diagram of Coyote Creek. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I have no objection.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, any objections to 2 through 6?
We have no objections.
Yeah. Okay.
We may have a question. We'll discuss with Derek at the break.
Certainly. And Mr. Broughton, that concluded your examination?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Biella, cross-examination?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Norris, referring to exhibit number 2, the OSM report, since you're not here and I can't show it to you, I assume you have a copy with you?
Yes, I do.
I'm going to turn to page 1, and I'm not sure if that's what the commissioners have for page 1. It starts at the top draft, and then the word introduction. If you have that.
Just a moment. Yes, I have that.
It's my page 1, but I'm not sure if it's everybody else's. And so since I can't show this to you, if you go to the, I guess it would be, paragraph 4, it starts with the word these maps. Do you see that?
Yes, the last paragraph on the page.
Right. Could you read those first two sentences?
Sure. These maps represent only a reconnaissance-level effort in the identification of areas which are likely underground, underlined, to meet this definition, and these areas, therefore, are called potential underlined alluvial valley floors. The intent of this mapping effort is to identify areas which might, at a future date, be designated as alluvial valley floors.
So this document is not a criteria and determination of alluvial valley floor for Kyle Creek, is it?
I'm not sure what you mean by criteria.
Well, this doesn't determine that Kyle Creek is an alluvial valley floor, does it?
No, it just says that it likely is.
And this was a very large-scale study over a wide area of western North Dakota at a very high level, was it not?
Yes.
Now, you are aware of, are you not, that when alluvial valley floor determinations are submitted by mining companies to the Public Service Commission, that the Public Service Commission not only reviews that report, but makes its own independent determination and often its own investigation. Are you aware of that?
I am aware that the Public Service Commission can do an independent investigation, and it can collect its own data. I don't know whether or not that was done in this case.
So you're not aware of the letter from the Public Service Commission to the mining company, which indicates it did its own independent verification and found and agreed no AVS? You're not aware of that letter?
I am aware of the letter indicating that the agency found, made a finding of no alluvial valley floor.
And that the letter indicates it made an independent determination of that fact. Are you aware of that?
I don't, as I sit here, recall the exact wording of the agency's letter.
So now, what we have presented and what you have presented are two very detailed long reports prepared by what appear to be experts in the field, certainly Mr. Bickle and Dakota Westmoreland, both of which have made studies of Coyote Creek and both of which have determined there is no AVF. You're aware of that, are you not?
I'm aware and have read both the Bickle and the Dakota Westmoreland studies. I have read the OSM reconnaissance study. In both the Bickle report simply summarized previous reports. And the Westmoreland had a great deal of data and discussion in it, but the bulk of that was unrelated to alluvial valley floors, and the only data and discussions related specifically to alluvial valley floors in the Westmoreland, which is, I think, of the documents, the key documents, the only portion of that that really dealt with the possible evidence for or against alluvial valley floors was the walkover data. The rest of it was interesting. It contributes to your understanding of the hydrology of the lands surrounding Coyote Creek, but it is not explicitly, does not explicitly investigate or is directly applicable to a determination for and alluvial valley floor determination. There's remarkably little that actually investigated the potential for alluvial valley floors in either of those documents.
Well, I want to refer you to your Exhibit 5. This is Mr. Bickel's report. And it would be page 2. The second paragraph. And I'm just going to sort of paraphrase there because, again, you're not here. He said his report's based on existing information and published works, approved mining permits and related data in the public domain from Surface Mining Reclamation and regulatory agencies. However, observations made by environmental professionals involved in the application baseline data for future Coyote Creek Mining Company permit application are incorporated and attributed to individuals where appropriate. That right there is a demonstration of independent data having been reviewed by Mr. Bickel, is it not?
It indicates he reviewed other people's data, unspecified data from unspecified people. It's a generic statement that is repeated verbatim in the other documents, but these documents do not present that data, and most of the data that they do reference and present in these reports are pertinent to hydrologic aspects of the mine area, but not to an alluvial valley floor determination.
With respect to the Bickel report, Exhibit 5, did you review the climate and hydrology section of the Bickel report starting on page 8?
I did.
And did you review the soil section of the Bickel report starting on page 16?
I did.
If you look at those pages, they're full of independent data. How can you dispute that?
I don't dispute that there is a lot of data presented in those parts of the report.
Mr. Norris, did you visit the Coyote Creek site to make this assessment you made today?
No, I used only the information in or related to the alluvial valley floor discussions in the permit application and the findings documents.
So to your criticism of the other experts, you too have made no independent study and independent data review, have you?
That's correct.
I have no further questions.
Ms. Jeff Kotzackle?
I think this is Exhibit A for asking if Director Deitch could question this witness, please.
Go ahead, Mr. Deitch.
Mr. Norris, you mentioned at the beginning of your testimony that you felt the AVF section of the actual permit application was deficient. Are you aware that state as well as federal rules require a pre-application determination for alluvial valley floor determinations?
Yes, I am aware of that. However, I did not make any judgments as to whether there was a deficiency in the application. I merely made the observation that the documents that were referenced were not part of the application.
But included in the application was a reference to the studies that had been conducted then, as well as including a copy of the letter that we issued making our AVF determination. That was included in the application?
Yes.
Okay. With regard to what's been labeled as Voigt Exhibit 2, on that introduction section that Mr. Biella mentioned earlier, I noticed on this the way things were copied that there's some discussion about the background going in for this reconnaissance report that was prepared by OSM. Then going to the next page, it appears that part of that is missing. Do you have that available to you right now? It's part of that paragraph carries over onto the next page, and that top of that next page is cut off. So it appears what is in Exhibit 2 here is incomplete. I don't know if there's anything critical comments here that have been omitted from that, the way it was copied or not.
What page is that? Can you identify that again for me?
It would be on page 1. Then you go to page 2, then it's sideways, and there's part of it cut off. It would be marked as page 2.
The exhibit that I have, it's not cut off. Do we have a number of different why doesn't everybody have the same exhibit, I guess?
I don't know. I think that one of these copies just got something screwed up in our printer when we were printing them out. I don't notice anyone else having that issue, and I just handed them another one.
Well, the record contains a full, it appears that the record contains a full copy, but I just want to make sure that everybody who's, you know, reviewing the documents is looking at the same thing.
Yep.
Your Honor, my page 2 is cut off.
Yours is cut off?
I think all 3 were. Yeah.
All right. I mean, I think as long as we have the full document in the record, it's okay, but yeah. I think it's important that everybody have the opportunity to, right now, to view the full document while we're doing examination of the witness.
Okay.
And the same thing happens, Your Honor, in a couple other pages later, okay. Like 18 and something later that.
Mr. Broughton, do you have any other, I mean, this, the one that's in the record, the one that I've marked as Exhibit 2, appears to be a full copy of the document. Do you have others that are like this one? Well, why don't we just take a real short break right now and see if we can get full copies of the Exhibit number 2 to the commissioners and the parties. Why don't we do that? Is that okay? All right, let's go off the record.
Should I stay on the phone, or will you call me back?
No, yeah, well, Daryl, can we call him back?
We'll
call you back. Just be prepared in 5 to 10 minutes or so, though, okay?
Sure.
All right, thank you.
No problem.
Can we use that one? Yeah, let's use that one, definitely.